So presidents battle typically with Congress, whether or not the chief executive and the legislative leaders are from the same party. That's just politics, and it's a conflict built into the Constitution and the two-party system. Occasionally, though, down through history, presidents find themselves at odds with the U.S. Supreme Court. The judiciary was always intended to be a restraint on the power of government, but sometimes that conflict can result in the nullification of a president's entire legislative program, a nullification where there is no appeal to a higher court, as President Franklin Delano Roosevelt found out back in the 1930s.
This plan will save our national constitution from hardening of the judicial artery.
That was President FDR back in 1937 reacting to the court having thrown out much of his New Deal program during his first term. He'd just been reelected, and Roosevelt hatched a plan to expand his power over the judiciary by allowing him to appoint a new Supreme Court judge whenever a sitting judge reached the age of 70. Now President Obama has not had his health care reform law struck down by the Supreme Court, although it could happen later this year following all those oral arguments we witnessed this week. And he has not threatened an FDR-style court-packing program in response, but there are parallels to what happened back in the 1930s. Anna Sale joins us now, reporter for the Politics website for our co-producer WNYC. Anna, welcome to the program.
Hi.
So take us back to the politics and the conflict that was going on between the court system and FDR during the New Deal.
Sure. Let's start with 1933. Franklin Roosevelt comes into office. Right. We've heard about his first 100 days, major legislative program to address the Great Depression, and Congress acted swiftly. But the Supreme Court also acted very quickly during that first term, throwing a lot of it out. The Supreme Court threw out overturned more laws than they ever had before, and at 10 times the traditional rate during that first term.
You know, and oddly, one of the parallels is a lot of the motivations for throwing out those laws had a lot to do with the arguments this week, the Commerce Clause,
exactly.
the regulations, intervening in the economy.
Exactly.
Sort of
most of those laws being thrown out, that all hinged on the Commerce Clause, the exact part of the Constitution about regulating interstate commerce we heard a lot about this week with the individual mandate.
So what was Roosevelt's response? I mean, you can't run against the Supreme Court particularly.
Exactly. So you have Roosevelt's first term. He's running for re-election in 1936. He's just been pummeled by the Supreme Court. But he doesn't run against the Supreme Court, though the Republicans who were taking him on really wanted him to. They wanted to draw him out because they were suspicious about his motivations, thought he might have some plans to strike back at the court. This is how Jeff Schessel put it. He's the author of a book called Supreme Power, Franklin Roosevelt versus the Supreme Court.
The Republicans were desperate to draw him out on the court issue. They really wanted to make it an issue in the campaign because they believed he must be hatching some kind of secret plot to curb the Supreme Court, and they wanted to make him talk about it. And he absolutely refused to engage on the issue at all. He was, in fact, hatching a secret plot to do something about the Supreme Court. And he was not at all interested in that being an election issue because he understood how easy it would be to demagogue the issue on the other side.
You know, that's fascinating because Roosevelt has Congress on his side. So the Republicans had a legitimate fear. He could get anything he wanted out of that Congress back in the mid-30s. It was a moment when a president overreached.
Exactly. So Roosevelt wins and landslide in the 1936 election. He comes back into office in 1937, and that secret plot, he rolls it out. It's this court-packing plan where he wants to appoint new Supreme Court justices for every judge that hits the age of 70. He described it as wanting to have more judges on the bench who had engaged with the problems of modern society, the economic and social issues, and also to deal with the caseload at the court. This is how he framed it.
Now that's a generous way of restating the hardening of the judicial arteries comment that we played earlier.
Exactly. That was a fireside chat in March 1937. This plan was a political disaster. He knew not to run on it in 1936, but he rolled it out anyway, and the public absolutely saw it as an overreach, and it didn't go anywhere.
So let's think now about what are the implications for the Obama administration, and throw in anything more you want to add about what went on back in the 30s, because you know the judiciary was supposed to be a restraint on government. That was the intention. And Americans seem to be pretty clear that that's an important restraint to keep in place. But there are huge limits to what presidents can do trying to actually deal with the court. And there's also limits on what an opposing party can say, oh, we were right. The Supreme Court ruled with us. The Republicans don't necessarily capitalize on a rebuke of the Health Care Reform Act, do they?
They don't. But let's go back to Roosevelt for just a minute,
because
what I think is so interesting is Roosevelt has this big plan for how he's going to redesign the judiciary. It doesn't go anywhere. And then the judiciary changes during that second term, just as a result of judges retiring, judges dying. And they started interpreting law really differently. So starting in Roosevelt's second term, you have kind of a whole different start of reinterpreting the Commerce Clause. And that's been how the court has interpreted it for 75 years up to now in this question of the individual mandate. Listen to Jeff Schessel and how he describes economic policy and how the court has handled it since 1937.
Beginning in 1937, the court really did get out of the way of economic policymaking generally. And so there has not been a meaningful challenge, not on this scale, to a centerpiece economic policy since the 1930s. There was no challenge like this to any of the Great Society programs, not in a meaningful way.
So the torch was passed generationally in the judiciary, and we're still living that generational shift. And it sounds like maybe there's another one coming right now, and that's what Obama's in the middle of.
That's the question we'll find out in late June or early July when we hear from the court on this health care law. And President Obama is going to be running for re-election just as Franklin Roosevelt was at the end of his first term. And he has these lessons of it's not smart to run against the judiciary. He also has the lessons of it's not smart if he is reelected to take the judiciary on. And this is how Jeff Schessel described it.
He's not campaigning against the court. And I think the president is wise enough to see that there's no margin in it, that you might get certain parts of your base energized by attacking a right-wing or corporate Supreme Court or whatever label you want to put on it. But there's nothing you can do about it.
That's the lesson.
And here's one thing to note, however. Franklin Roosevelt, during his first term, widely popular. So were those New Deal programs. The individual mandate, not so popular
right.
with Americans. So that's where the parallels end.
And I suppose there still could be a secret plan to change the Supreme Court.
Who knows?
Being hatched in the White House right now. Anna Sale, reporter for our co-producer WNYC's political website, itsafreecountry.org. Some of the historical lessons from presidential battles with the Supreme Court. Thanks, Anna.
Thank you.